Welcome to Purple Politics Nevada. I'm your host, Lucia Starbuck. The name refers to the fact that the state isn't red or blue, it's both. Today, I'm following up with voters you've heard from all year round to see how they're feeling now with Election Day right around the corner. I talked with all of these Northern Nevadans before President Joe Biden announced he was no longer seeking re-election. First, you'll hear from 28-year-old Reno resident Carlos Perez Campbell. I met him in June, along with other nonpartisans who make up the largest number of registered voters in Nevada over both Democrats and Republicans. After the last election, Perez Campbell registered as a nonpartisan to protest the two-party system and Nevada's closed primaries. But the day Biden dropped out and endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris, everything changed. Thank you so much for joining me, Carlos. So last time we talked was right before the June primary. Feels like a lifetime ago. As a new nonpartisan, you mentioned you were sitting out and looking forward to the general election. So here we are. My big first question is, what is your reaction following the big switch up for the Democratic presidential candidate? Is this something you were expecting?
Not really something I was expecting, honestly. I think it came as a shock to a lot of us, but I'm going to tell you, it just completely changed everything in my mind. I do have to say I'm very biased because in 2019, I worked for Kamala Harris for the People. I went right back, registered Democrat, and I've been volunteering for her campaign a lot.
Wow. What is it about Harris that made you make such a big switch?
Prior to this moment, I think it was a lot of frustrations with the party system. I like Joe Biden as a person. He didn't do terrible things policy-wise either. In 2019, I worked for Kamala. After she had to drop out and Joe Biden became top of ticket, even though she became vice president, I never was able to fully get behind Joe Biden. I voted for him in 2020. I told you last time that even though I was doing this as a protest thing, that I was still going to vote for him, but I just couldn't do it in terms of giving him my full support. So me and my wife kind of sat out in politics for the last 4 years. Granted, we had a child, so that's a good reason to kind of step aside.
Let's get into some of the issues. I know last time we talked, immigration is a big one for you. Looking at Harris's record, when she first ran in 2020, she talked a lot about fighting for pathways to citizenship. Now she's really throwing her support behind the failed border security bill, promising to bring it back and to pass it, which would do, you know, a number of things. It would close some loopholes for asylum, make it easier for the president to shut down the border, but it would also expand legal immigration through visas. What do you want to see from her?
As an immigrant myself from Mexico, who had to go through a process of becoming a citizen, this is obviously an issue that's very close to my heart. Her mom came to the U.S. as a young person and, you know, ended up raising two amazing daughters. Her dad's from Jamaica, obviously went very far in academia. I think both of them really represent, as an immigrant trying to fight for that American dream, represents exactly what a lot of us are here to try and accomplish for ourselves. Reminds me of my three-year-old. You know, she's going to have a dad who was an immigrant from Mexico and a Black mom. I see so much of my daughter represented in Kamala Harris in that biracial identity. So I think that on immigration, for who she is, who her parents are, lots of credibility there. Now, when it comes to the substance of policy, look, there is some serious issues being faced with immigration. I think it's an issue that needs to be dealt with a lot of compassion. Kamala's current stance with this is something that I can 100% get behind. Kamala's perspective of let's give a little bit more power to do what we have to do at the U.S.-Mexican border to protect against the drugs coming in or combat transnational organizations that are doing some pretty bad stuff, that's a good thing. I see it as a humanitarian thing to get that under control because there is also extensive cases of people who are brought here after paying someone to transport them across, get left in the desert and die. And then, yes, expanding the visa programs and expanding the legal pathways for the other vast majority of immigrants who got here on an aircraft who are now just working, living, studying in the States makes so much more sense to me.
You have a three-year-old little girl. Last time we talked, the cost of childcare was also a big issue for you. You talked about going back to school to get your master's degree, to get a higher paying job. You mentioned you're paying $1,500 a month to pay for childcare. Can you talk about what kind of burden that puts on your family and what kind of solutions you would like to see?
It was a huge expense because of a position that I took within my current company. My wife actually had to go to being stay-at-home. We were able to avoid that cost and worked out so much better for us because such a large portion of the money she was bringing in was just going towards just childcare, right? I would like to hear a little bit more about that at the forefront. One of the proposals that I've seen kind of tossed out there in the U.S. is an expansion of the Head Start program. When I was a kid, I went to Head Start, and I actually attribute a lot of my success to the foundations that I was able to receive early on when I got to the United States.
I want to ask you about another topic we talked about last time, climate. Right now, we're seeing the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. And according to scientific accounts, it's been exacerbated by climate change and the destruction and the devastation. Do you feel like the environment and climate is on the back burner when it comes to issues? And how do you want to see candidates respond?
This is actually something that me and my wife do talk about a lot, especially after we decided to have our kid. It weighed a lot on us, actually. I'm a very devout Catholic as well. The Pope talks about that quite a bit and our responsibility as Catholics to sort of take care of the environment. And so when we're at church on Sundays and the priest is talking, we hear about it. It's become a little bit of an existential thing for me and my wife. And we do look at our daughter and we think, were we right sometimes on maybe having a child, knowing the climate was going to change so dramatically in the coming decades, how dire the situation truly is. And it is so clear that that is fueled by human-driven climate change. We don't even have to look that far, like even the Davis fire. The fact that there was a fire in our community this close to home, that they were evacuating parts of South Reno, that's unbelievable. I remember taking a class here at UNR. It was a climate change course, actually. And we were talking about these effects. I remember being in my classroom a decade ago and being like, oh, yeah, that's going to happen one day. Well, it's happening now. I know Kamala Harris is looking at so many options when it comes to use of clean energy, right? I will be honest. I think the frustration on my end is that it's not happening quick enough. It's not taken seriously enough. I hope that when we have a Harris administration, that there will be an acceleration because it really is a climate crisis.
How quickly after Joe Biden dropped out did you switch back to Democrat?
I want to say day of, actually. Like, I drove out to see Kamala announce for president. I wouldn't walk down the block to see Joe Biden. My wife is volunteering every Thursday. I'm doing every Saturday. We were just talking about my birthday plans at the end of the month. I want to go canvassing for Kamala Harris, and that's how we're going to spend my birthday. That's what's going to make me happy. I could not imagine spending my birthday in a better way than talking to my neighbors about Kamala Harris. I'm a little biased because I've met her and her husband. Regardless of politics, they're just some of the most incredible people I've met in my life. When you meet really nice people, you're willing to do so much for them. And fun fact, it was on a day with Doug Emhoff that I decided I was going to marry my wife, actually, because we were talking about our relationships. He was telling me a little bit about how, like, hey, man, we got to support strong women, you know, in our lives and things like that. And I was telling him about Megan, my wife. And after that conversation with Doug Emhoff, I walked away, you know, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to marry this girl. And that's what I did.
When I talk to Democrats, Republicans, and everyone in between, almost every single voter says one of their top issues is the economy, and more specifically, the cost of living. And they're looking for their presidential candidate, either Harris or former President Donald Trump, to fix that issue. Next, I follow up with Paola Loop, an immigrant from Argentina who is now living in Carson City. Thank you so much for joining me, Paola. So this will be your third time casting your ballot for Trump. Why does he continue to earn your support?
I look at my situation. When he was president, my paycheck lasted to groceries, to put gas on my tank, and to save a little bit. We're not talking about thousands or even hundreds, but I was able to save money. Right now, forget it. I am living paycheck to paycheck, almost to the penny. The worry in my head these last at least 3 years, when things started really going to me downhill, even when Obama was in the presidency, I had not this stress about paying bills. My mortgage payments just went up again. They adjust the taxes. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. That's why he has my support. When he was the president, I had very to none worry about how I was going to pay my next bill.
We first met in Carson City in 2022 on the first day of early voting for the June primary for the midterm. And then yes. We last talked for Purple Politics back in May. And each time you've told me that immigration is a top issue for you. Is that still the case?
100%. It's so infuriating when you put all your time, energy, money into doing things right, legally, to have this amount of people coming without even had to move a finger. And I know this by talking with other people in my situation, that they came, they did their paperwork, they pay, and seeing this, I'm going to say, open doors policy. Okay, if you're having a hard time in your country, and we as a country are able to provide some help, by all means, go for it. But when we don't even know who's crossing the border, it's a slap in the face to all of us who did it the right way. And it is a slap in the face to the citizens that were here before.
As a Republican who is pretty fired up about Donald Trump, I'm dying to know your reaction on what's going on the other side. What do you think of Harris taking Biden's spot as the Democratic presidential candidate?
The one thing that I guess bothers me the most is that I'm going to say illegal, because in my eyes, nobody voted for her. She was just put in there. The fact that some Americans are going with it without even questioning. Right now, I'm thinking they are being highly manipulated instead of questioning and asking why. I mean, no, wait a minute. The ticket was supposed to be Biden-Harris, not Harris-Waltz.
A lot happened this summer. The last time we saw each other was actually at Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance's rally in Reno in July.
Yes.
That was just 2 weeks after the first attempted assassination on Trump's life. I see you shaking your head. Kind of what's going through your mind? What are your thoughts on the current political climate?
I have goosebumps hearing you say that. We can talk for hours about conspiracy theories. I do believe there's something much bigger that we as citizens don't know about. It really was a miracle that he's not dead. As a citizen, I feel very upset and sad that this country that it was for many, many centuries being the best country politically, the best country in regards to democracy, to see it go this path, it's scary. Besides the emotions and the crying and the upsetting, I'm coming from a country that this was like nothing. Oh yeah, we kill one president, we kill the other. I am very concerned about what this election will bring. One way or the other, obviously I want my candidate to win, but I also think that there's gonna be consequences and his life will be absolutely even more at risk than what it is now. And to see this happening, I even told my husband, I said, babe, we might be looking into going back to Argentina.
The current political climate is also something many voters have brought up during this election year. Nevadans all over the political spectrum don't feel that they can have civil conversations with their friends and neighbors about politics, and that's very upsetting to them. One person who sees that up close and personal is Lance Whitney, the chair of the Democratic Party in the very red Elko County. Thank you so much for joining me, Lance. So last time we talked was in March, which feels like an eternity ago. We talked about political climate. We talked about Democrats, you know, not wanting to put yard signs on their lawns, not wanting to be super public about their politics. How are things now?
You know, I don't see a lot of yard signs around for either side.
Oh.
And it's a little bit sad. Back in 2016, for the first time, because I've been involved in politics in this county for a long time, we just never saw stuff like this where people were stealing yard signs or they were defacing them or people were getting their houses egged. I think that this time around, people are a little more cautious. That's understandable. If you have a problem with what somebody has to say, then you voice your opinion at the ballot box. You have no business defacing a yard sign or pulling it from somebody's yard. That's a personal property. I can't believe it. Now you're going to see far more Trump signs than you will Kamala Harris.
Unlike some Democrats, you were very supportive of President Joe Biden. So how do you feel now that Harris is a Democratic presidential candidate?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously very supportive of Vice President Harris and Governor Walz. I'm a supporter of President Biden's because he was running again. I kind of feel bad for him, pretty much being forced out. But I understand the party pretty much said, pretty much the country, we don't want another election between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. Biden's getting quite old, and I think that that office is weighing on him, even though I think he's done an incredible job. Imagine the courage to say, I'm going to go ahead and step down because it's what's best for the country. That's got to be a tough decision. I was asleep at the time. It was my day off, so I was sleeping in, and I heard a knock at my door. Then it was my roommate. He said, Lance, Joe Biden dropped out. And I, like, sprung up. Like, what? Then we sat and watched the news for the rest of the day because I didn't think it was going to happen. It's going to be a close election, I'm sure of it. It's got me on pins and needles.
Why are you supporting Harris and Walz?
Is it partisan? Probably, but not really. they represent values that I believe in. Pro-choice, pro-union, pro-middle class, whereas Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, I don't like the rhetoric that comes from them, especially not Donald Trump. The stuff that comes out of his mouth is so dangerous sometimes. You can disagree with your opposition, but you don't have to demonize them.
I've heard from some Republicans, they're looking over at Democrats and saying, well, how come Harris is at the top of the ticket? She never got one single vote. How do you respond to that?
It's just simply not true. Joe Biden dropped out. He endorsed Kamala Harris, and we as a Democratic Party elected her at the convention. The Republican Party does the same thing. They elected Donald Trump at the convention. Anybody could have ran against her.
Both vice presidential candidates, Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, come from small towns. Does this matter or make a difference to rural voters?
You know, I think so. J.D. Vance, he's got a whole story, which I think is fascinating. But so does Tim Walz. And yes, I think that it will matter because rural voters, we've often throughout history kind of felt a little bit ignored. The idea that we've got a couple of vice presidential candidates on the ticket that come from rural towns, I think it's kind of a big deal. Rural voices matter.
We've seen Walz stop in Reno 3 times since June, but candidates, they rarely visit rural communities. How can you make the case that they should?
I get the population sits down in Clark County, Washoe, but there's a whole swath up here to ignore us. You're going to do so at your own peril. Barack Obama understood something. He visited this place several occasions. It served him well. You're not going to win in Elko County, more than likely, if you're a Democrat. But you have to mitigate those losses to win the state overall. I wish we could at least get a surrogate up there. Gosh, I'd love to have Harris. Or I think Tim Walz would just be smashing.
That was Lance Whitney, the Elko County Democratic Party chair, Carson City resident Paola Loop, and Reno resident Carlos Perez Campbell. I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you're listening to Purple Politics Nevada. Throughout this election, I've been exploring how the high cost of living is hurting voters in different ways. That's especially true for seniors who are on fixed incomes. Next, you'll hear from Sparks resident Marcy Cooper Smith. She was part of the senior roundtable featured on the show in July. Thank you so much for joining me, Marcy. It feels like a lifetime ago since we've last talked. For you as a nonpartisan, what did you think about the big switch this summer with Harris becoming the Democratic presidential nominee instead of Biden?
Kind of interesting. I liked Biden in 08. We got to meet all the candidates when they came in. He had a couple of small gatherings, and he came across just like we thought, an everyday person, willing to listen, both sides of the aisles. I don't really know much about her, and I've spoken to a lot of seniors, and we really don't really know, to tell you the truth. A lot of us grew up with Joe Biden. A lot of us were okay with him running again, but not okay with him running again, if that makes sense to you, because we remembered the Senator Joe Biden. I never thought I'd say this, but there is a lot of apathy in the senior community right now about these elections. I've never heard so many seniors, including myself, am I really going to vote? Do I really want to vote? Are they really listening to us?
Being on a fixed income through Social Security, like many seniors, how have you balanced your budget each month? What has that been like?
It's been tough. What you do is, okay, do I want to do a dinner out this month? Or we'd rather do 2 breakfasts? The other big thing is the over-the-counter. The toiletries have become out of control. It doesn't matter where you go. And I'm allergic to scents and shampoo. So the only shampoo I can get is $12 a bottle. You can't really treat yourself. The little luxuries, when you're on a fixed income, they get less and less.
You're a member of the Nevada Housing Coalition,
yes.
But you're a renter yourself, something you're dealing with personally. How much of your income goes toward your rent?
A lot. Almost 50% or more probably goes to our rent.
Wow.
Which doesn't leave too much for other stuff. Plus, we have healthcare, we have cable, we have NV Energy. You add up everything and you sometimes just squeak it out. So every 10 months, you start to get nervous. What is my new rent going to be? Am I going to be able to afford it? Because if you can't, you have very little time to be able to find a place. Then you got to figure out, okay, now I need first month's rent. Then I need a security deposit. Now I got to find a mover. your pressure goes up, your anxiety level goes up, you get on edge.
What kinds of solutions would you like to see?
Do a pilot program, get that one landlord who's willing to just do a handful of his senior residents, give them a 2 or 3 year lease. Give them their increases ahead of time. It is not rent control. I come from New York. We called it rent stabilization. You could say rent stabilization is like your workforce housing. That's who it would help, and seniors. And as you moved out, they could push the apartment to market rent. And the way they got landlords and owners to do it is they got a tax abatement.
These things have huge price tags, rent and health care. What other main issues are you seeing for seniors or for your family?
Nutrition is becoming a big problem for a lot of seniors as prices are going up. Some of them are eating one meal a day. And you're seeing that at the senior centers. We just had a huge senior fest. We had a sponsor, Jay Resort, and Goldust West gave us some funding. We were able to get these sandwiches from Delitown, and the seniors loved it. And a lot of those 600 sandwiches were feeding seniors. They were like, thankful, this is my food for the day. So that was kind of telling. Yeah. You know, they were grabbing any resources they could get their hands on.
You're hearing seniors might just stay home this November. You also seem extremely frustrated and not heard. Are you going to be voting?
I'm going to vote. I'm not sure if I'm voting the whole ticket, and I'm going to have to look at each candidate and if any of them have a senior platform.
What do you want to see on a candidate's senior platform?
That they want to meet with regular seniors. When you meet with people from the agencies or other electeds, that's not hearing what an average senior is dealing with. Try to get regular drugs to be negotiated. Housing, stop pushing it down the road. Everything is, what are we going to do in 2 years? If you're 80 years old, you don't have 2 years to wait. They don't have answers. They don't want to have answers. I don't know, but at least tell us. That's what I'd like to see.
No candidate is perfect. That's what Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe Chairman Stephen Wadsworth, an elected official himself, always says. There are 28 tribes in Nevada, but do they feel heard during elections? The chairman says he isn't usually super public about his politics, but a week after our interview, I saw him on stage at Democratic vice presidential candidate Tim Walz's rally in Reno. That's when the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe became the first tribe in Nevada to endorse the Harris-Walz campaign.
We are choosing to stand behind candidates who will protect our sacred land, treat us as equal members of society, and protect vital funding for the programs that we rely on.
When we sat down for our interview, Wadsworth said the voting decision was weighing on him. But that changed when the Harris-Walz campaign reached out to the tribe asking for their endorsement. But it was a decision the chairman didn't make on his own. The tribal council voted, and it wasn't unanimous. But Wadsworth said it was necessary for the tribe's exposure to be recognized and to have a voice. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me, Chairman Wadsworth. Last time we spoke, you talked about the importance of candidates understanding the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe's culture and history and really coming out to and seeing the reservation. Do you feel that candidates and political parties have made that effort?
There's been some reaching out, but honestly, it's really only been from the Democratic Party. We've heard no word from the Republican Party or Kennedy before he dropped out, which is a shame because this state is very Native-centric.
Yeah, how does it feel to just receive communication from the Democratic Party?
I think it's just nice that we're recognized because, as we've seen in 2020, with the Native vote really swinging the election, I feel, in Arizona, they really have to start taking a look at reservations countrywide. We're not the biggest group, not the biggest minority. I know there was the big joke in 2020 when they had the demographic showing, you know, of African Americans, Latinos, white people, and then they listed us as something else. That's a running gag. It's just so funny thing. Like, you can't even take the time to respect who came here first. They're just something else. But, you know, Native people, they take a lot of stuff in stride. I think by them not recognizing us, it's the tribes, not just my tribe. It's our duty to get our names out there. Essentially, the whole rallying cry should be, you know, we're not going quietly into the night.
You voted for president for the first time in 2020. Now, here we are 4 years later. If you're open to sharing, who will you be casting your ballot for president?
I usually don't share. I keep voting very personal. But I will be voting for Kamala Harris, yeah. Tim Walz. Yeah.
How did they earn your vote this election?
Well, they're really the only ones that have come out and said that they will protect tribal sovereignty. That's what we have to build for. You know, you can ask any Native what tribal sovereignty means to them, and you'll probably get a different answer every time. But to me, it really means we are exercising our opportunities, and those can take us a long way. And I think for this reservation, this tribe, it has taken us a long way. I mean, that's why we still have a lake. It'd be another dry lake bed in Nevada.
I'm curious, is there going to be an issue top of mind for you when you go to the polls?
It's tough. There's really no perfect candidates. Two of the main things that I think about are women's rights, women's health, and the mining. When it comes to the Democrats, they're all about the mining. They just want to mine Nevada until it's a husk of what it normally was, which is bad. But at the same time, the other party, how much do they care about women? You know, I've got strong female influences all around me, and it's like, that's just a travesty.
Is access to reproductive care a big issue for you?
The overturning of Roe v. Wade, it's one of those things that kind of just weighs on my mind, because it's like, isn't that why we have a Supreme Court? Because we need to make it fair and accessible for everybody. By allowing the states to do it, you are saying, you individuals in this state, you don't have equal rights access to those in this state. And maybe they don't have the means and opportunity to move to that state. Kind of the same thing when Indians were finally recognized as U.S. citizens and allowed to vote. They left it with the states. And it's like, that's not equal access for everybody. And that's what happens when you do leave it to the state. But this is America. It's the United States. That's got to be a united front on that end.
And same question I asked you last time. Why is the Native vote important?
Because we got to get our voice out there. That's the whole thing. You don't want to be known as the something else's forever.
That was Pierbon Lake Paiute Tribe Chairman Stephen Wadsworth. Earlier, you heard from voters Marcy Cooper-Smith, Paola Loop, Carlos Perez-Campbell, and Elko County Democratic Party Chair Lance Whitney. I'm Lucia Starbuck, and you've been listening to Purple Politics Nevada.